Welcome to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. It's been a while, hasn't it? Hopefully everyone is keeping as well as can be at the moment. I'm Chris Sampson and I'm with Michael Bokel. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm interested to see how this one's going to go.
Yeah, definitely. So Michael kind of alluded to it there, but on this episode, I'll be quizzing Michael on the Scottish FA's approach to digital during the latest international break. Because I'm not sure if you've heard it, but we are going to the Euros next summer. Before we get into the business side of things, when we talk through that, I did want to talk about some actual football with you, Michael. I was in shock more than anything watching it at home. How was it for you?
An emotional roller coaster. I think internally, even before the games got rearranged, I was definitely banging the optimism drum. I was convinced we were qualifying. I tried to take as many people on that journey of optimism with me internally as possible. And, you know, even when things happened, obviously, with what's going on in the world, and then the games then come across two different months, you've got no fans there. I was still convinced we were going to do it. So when we were 1-0 up in the second half, I didn't really surprise me. I was very looking forward to the game before. I started getting a little bit nervous at the start, but I mean, it was a comfortable.
We were playing well as well.
Comfortable, assured performance.
Yeah,
we've seen one in an away match for a long time for Scotland, and you know, I think that's one thing that you can heap a lot of praise on Steve Clarke and his staff is that, you know, personally, I thought as a team we've not really had an identity for a while. And you can start to see it. Obviously, it's taken a little bit of time, but under Steve and his coaching staff, that you can see an identity coming into play. We want to be hard to beat. When you look at the subsequent games, also we created a lot of chances as well. Just didn't really find the cutting edge of the finish that we needed. But you know, there's a lot of encouraging signs there. But yeah, during that game, I was comfortable, nervous. I mean, it was, you know, the clock ticks on, you've got 20 minutes left, you've got 10 minutes left, and my brain's already racing, going, right, what we've got to do, I'm excited. And Stephanie, my partner's not Scottish, and she was like so invested in it as well, and then that goal went in. And then you're just like, right, you know, we're going into extra time here, that's a painful blow to take. And then you just go, right, let's just, I don't care how we're qualifying here. let's just get through this. And obviously penalties happen, and like everybody across the country, you know, your heart's in your mouth. You're at one point, I think I was pretty much on the ground. And then, you know, David Marshall does, and you know, it's a mixed bag of emotions, really, for me, in terms of I've got my fan hat on, I've got my work hat on, I've got an outpouring of emotion, sort of, will not lie, there was tears in my eyes, and, you know, but then it's like, actually, shit, I need to actually go and do, make sure we're doing all the work, and credit to Jack, so, because he was live tweeting the penalties, for example, and I don't think I was in any state to be live tweeting penalties. A fantastic job by him, and from then on in, yeah, it was just party time from there.
I can't even imagine live tweeting a penalty shootout that big as a Scotsman.
I mean, as I said, the fact that, you know, you go into work mode, but also there's so much riding on that game, and for Jack, a lot of it came down to the preparation he'd done. He had his notes ready that he could copy and paste some stuff in, and he had a clear structure and process in his head of how he was going to do it. Obviously, throw in the tension, the emotion and nerves in there. It's an enviable task.
We've obviously known that we had this fixture coming for quite a long time now. When did the planning start for you guys for digital content?
Probably started January this year. Obviously, the games were meant to be in March, and then that didn't happen. And actually, to be fair, probably it had started way before. We always knew we were going to have that playoff, and when you were out, we were knocked out of qualification, then the brain started working in terms of what do we want to do going into that. Obviously, we still had games in between, but, you know, it gives you time to plan, and then we were gearing up for that March game, so then it didn't happen, and then there was a change, because obviously those games were back-to-back. One was on the Thursday, one was on the following week, and then that didn't happen, so we had to adapt our plans. A couple of things dropped off. I mean, internally, we discussed whether do you hold a physical party if we qualified after the final when it was back in March. But obviously, none of that can happen going into the latter half of the year. So, yeah, look, it was how do we adapt our plans? We wanted to do a fair bit of content around fans and showing fan experience out of what, because when Hamden's rocking on nights like what that should have been for the semi-final in March, we wanted to show a lot of that. We wanted to if we had been in the final in the end of March, that we would have potentially looked at being filming in a pub, for example, to show that fan experience, because the whole thing of the planning was setting objectives and looking at going, what are we trying to achieve with our digital content? And one of the things was, how do we make fans feel a part of this as much as possible? And that got more emphasis put on that as we went into the games in October and November, where, you know, there was no fans could be at Hampden for the semi-final and no fans could be in Belgrade for the final. And so for us, it was like, right, we need to make sure that what we're doing is creating content for fans that give them some sort of experience. You're never going to be able to replicate the full experience, but make them feel like a part of it. That this is not just for players, this is for fans and for everybody in the country that has been waiting so long. So, you know, the planning had to change, but a lot of our core principles and content plans kind of stayed together. It just had to then get changed over 2 months instead of like a 1 week period.
Yeah, I guess we'll come into kind of more of the execution and a little bit, but I want you, just something you mentioned there in terms of for the fans, and then actually when you think about it and you take a step back after it's happened, a lot of what you did eventually do was for the fans because they couldn't be there.
Yeah, and that was one thing I was very conscious of, and so were the rest of the team, was that, you know, I was fortunate. I was at Hampden for the semi-final and got to be there for the penalty shootout, and a very surreal experience and everything that goes with that. But I was lucky, and, you know, I got to feel that emotion within a stadium. And as I said, look, you're never going to be able to replicate that. But we were in a very unique position that people weren't even really in pubs watching any of this. People were watching it at home, either by themselves or with their family. And it's a whole different watching experience for somebody. Then we've got a good number of fans that go home and away, so for them to be watching what is such an important game but having to do it in their own home, then obviously there's a lot that we want to do to try and help. And obviously we've looked at things like the fan packs at the start of the international period once we resume football to give acknowledge fans. And then from our content point of view, was all about sharing those moments and experiences and giving them as much access as we can, as well as going into these games, hyping them up and letting people know that we know how important these games are and what it means to everybody. So, yeah, it was just finding that balance as much as possible.
One of the ways that you obviously tried to get fans as close to the action as much as possible was through quite a lot of video content. Again, we'll touch on the specifics of some of the videos in a bit, but how do you start to plan what you want to actually capture on video, and what's the process for it?
Yeah, so again, it comes down to trying to we determine what we want to achieve going into an international period. Now, whether that is one where we identify that we need to bring the fans closer to some of the players, make them more relatable. You would have seen that, I mean, you're never going to change the whole fan base's opinions, but we've done stuff with content with specific players in the past, To show a different side to them. We do a lot of fan content, although we were conscious and purposely didn't do fan content really going into these semi-finals and finals, because one of the things was we want to show like this, we mean business. The whole messaging around let's do this was right, we've been serious about this, we're going in. So there wasn't any of that sort of fan content. We would have looked at, we did the ahead of the semi-final, I think it was, we did the what it means to play for Scotland content, for example. And we get to a point where we're going, right, we know what we want to achieve. And then, so if it's video content, for example, we tend to create a hype video ahead of every international period. We're in a fortunate position in one way that we don't have games every weekend. So Scotland are not playing every weekend. So we have the, it's a not a novelty Scotland are playing, but we have more time. It's a less common. So we try to hype these things up. We want people watching these videos to have the hairs on the back of their neck stand up, for example. We want people to feel an emotional connection to Scotland and then get excited about the game. So for the semi-final, for example, we did a video where it was fans talking about how old they were when they were, we last qualified for a men's tournament, and took through that little story. Generally what happens is I will have an idea, and some of these could be a crimson, an idea that I had 2 or 3 years ago that I've got in a note on my phone, for example. But what I'll try and do is then I'll brief it out. So I will start writing in a Word document or an email, and I will try and storyboard it. Now, I don't mean, when I say storyboard, I don't mean draw it out like square by square, this is what's happening. It's more about what I'll do is I'll write out, so I can see, for the take the semi-final video, was like I can see pictures of people being at France 98, and we'll have a voiceover saying it's been a long time, what a summer that was. And then I was kind of outline a script a little bit, and then go, right, this is what will happen on the screen, then this is how I can see it going in, this is what I would like to happen. And then what I'll do is I'll take Ailsa and or Connor now through it, and they'll work the magic. And I'm very lucky that I've got two very talented people in my team that somehow seem to see my visions and turn it into something. And to be fair, I give them a bit of creative freedom as well, is that if things don't work or flow the way that they'll find a better way of making things flow, and then we'll come back and we'll maybe have a few tweaks, a few edits, and sometimes we'll stick with the original script that I've wrote, or we'll end up going, right, no, I'm going to change that doesn't quite work, we need that to flow. And but you know, sometimes if you look at the semi-final video, we had to get loads of different voiceovers from fans, so we used some recognisable voices and the likes of Luke Shanley, but also used people we knew to use those voices. Things like the final video with the John Collins and Colin Hendry, that inspiration comes, and somebody actually tweeted me about it going, this looks very familiar to the Ryder Cup European team motivational video. And I went straight back, I went, yeah, 100%, that's where I've lifted my inspiration from. We've talked about it before on this podcast, is that not shy to get inspiration from other places, but again, it's adapting it and making it into what we can for our end. But that one takes a bit more preparation because you're trying to line up X players, obviously we've got lockdown restrictions, etc. So that one took a bit more planning and a bit more putting together. But when I've done those briefs and done that sort of plan, and one thing I probably should have said is before I probably send it to Ailsa or Connor, I might actually include Mike, who's our market manager, in it, or who a couple of other people in it, just to get a bit of sense check on it and get their thoughts on messaging and comments and work it that way. Now, generally, that's how it works with when I'm looking at over the videos and stuff like that. But that's not to say that, like, within my team, it's anybody can come up with an idea and we'll try and run with it. Jack was the one that came up with the idea for the one in September, so the first Nation League games, and it was our first game behind closed doors, and it was Jack put this nice bit together. It was about watching on your TV in your home, and whatever place it was in Scotland, and then it was with a pal and Paisley and whatever else, and he kind of worked that one. But again, we all look through the script and we all try and make it work to see what we can do. And again, it's for me when planning the videos as well, is there's the objectives. And with the semi-final and the final, for example, I wanted the semi-final hype video to connect with the final hype video. So semi-final is about the fans and them not being there, but also about their messaging and what it means to them. And then the final was using ex-players speaking to the players, but actually they were speaking to the fans about what it was, their perspective. But at the end, the same message came through all both times, was let's do this. So yeah, look, it's a lot of the ones like them are planned. Then you've got other videos, so things like, and I'm sure we'll get on to them, but the 1 week on video that we did, I had an idea for that. Should we qualify that we should do a video like that to look back on? Now, you can't predict the drama that's going to go on. You can't predict that it's going to be a penalty shootout and you're going to get the reactional video, for example. But I had an idea and an outline of, you know, there's going to be commentary from different people. There's going to be clips, there's going to be reaction online that we can use to turn into something. And then once it happens, is looking at just keeping a note of, oh, that was good, spotted that, and just having a bank of things ready to go. And again, from my perspective, it was storyboard it all out. I passed it on to Connor and he managed to turn it into something that was, it's probably one of my favourite bits of content we've ever done.
That sounds like a massive team effort then. Obviously, you were saying that sometimes quite a lot of the time it can be you going to Ailsa and Connor, but anybody can come in with ideas and you all kind of work on them together. Is there an editing process as well? And there's a kind of initial video made?
Yeah, so it can be a very collaborative process amongst a number of different people in there, but it's people just getting sight of it before we're doing it, to just make sure that it ties in with what they're doing, or just being courteous, really. And then other times, like, so the 1 week on video, I had the idea, I'd mentioned it to the team, but it wasn't until we qualified that then it was really just me and Connor that worked on that one. But yeah, it can be, and the editing process was me initially, so we'll get it. Generally what happens is I'll take a first look at it, make the changes that, or get the changes made that I want made to it, and before we share a bit wider, and then we'll share with a couple of people and just get their thoughts, and they'll maybe spot things that myself and Ailsa or myself and Connor haven't spotted, and then we'll then get it in a place. So I'm big on team, I'm big on everybody feeling that they're part of it internally, and that if anybody's got an idea that they can take it to the table, and if it fits in with what we're trying to achieve, that we'll definitely try and make it work. And as I said, yeah, it's, if somebody has a good idea for a video, we'll look to explore that. Just in the instance of these couple of videos, or two or three videos, it was an idea that kind of I'd had or been sitting on, and we made those ones work.
I guess one thing that might be obvious for you guys now working in that environment on a daily basis, but one thing that sometimes strikes me is that how busy an international break can be for you guys. Like, and even that day was a busy one as well. I'm sure the under-21s were playing earlier on. How does that feed into the plan? How does that all work together?
I mean, we could do so much more. Actually, the under-21s day was quite an interesting day, because one of the things that had happened was we're a bit like the media. We sort of jump on the media day, and that's the sort of main day that we'll get player access. We're very conscious that international windows are short, especially when a game's on a Thursday. John McGinn, for the last two international windows, has been working at 7:40. Working at 7:45, he's been playing at 7:45 or 7:15 on the Sunday night. So a lot of the squad are then not getting to meet up until the Monday. So we've only got a small window to bank as much content as we can. We ahead of the final, we had done filming with Stuart Armstrong, for example. Now, it was one of our more in-depth ones, similar to what we've done with Scott McTominay, Ollie McBurney recently. Really good piece by all accounts, and we spoke about a number of things, including obviously, and I feel sorry for Stuart because every time I see mentions of him and what he should have done in that England game or whatever it is, you know, and managed to speak to him about all that. But on the day of the under-21s game, we had already realised that one of our memory cards corrupted, so we were struggling to keep the Stuart Armstrong stuff. We thought there's a chance we've lost it. So not only are we planning and trying to do a live stream, we've got Ailsa flying out to Belgrade. I've got Connor also at the under-21s, but trying to deal with a recovery company in Edinburgh to see if they could work any sort of magic. So, yeah, no, it was... which we obviously didn't because nobody's seen the Stuart Armstrong stuff, and that one's gone forever, unfortunately, as well as some other content we did around Christmas stuff. And that's just the nature of it. You kind of have to, sometimes these technical things happen, and we have to just adapt and go with it. But on a 21st day, it's, you want to give them as much attention as you can, but obviously very conscious that you've got that such a significant game in the evening, and we're live streaming it as well. So, you know, that's a big thing. We want to push audience numbers, but we're also wary that, you know, it is a day that is everybody's looking forward to the evening game, so people will be interested in Scotland content throughout. So it's an opportunity for people to get that. It gives us an opportunity on the live stream to discuss the connection between the under-21s and the men's squad and the sort of pathways that they've got, and that, you know, internally, I'm praying for a positive result in that 21s game, because you want that feel-good factor to carry on straight after that game going into the final as well. So, you know, it's happened a lot in the past where we've had live stream at various youth levels ahead of whether it's a women's game or a men's game. And, you know, it keeps you on your toes. Everybody has their role. So for me, I was at the 21s with Connor, filming some action, because again we're trying to plan and bank content on the hope that the 21s were going to qualify, and I've got the managing the live stream. And then you've got Jack is covering again social remotely to make sure that we're still getting some men's A content out in and around the 21s game, but we're also being able to give the 21s game as much sort of focus and attention as possible.
Let's move on a little bit. It's still a bit of planning, but a bit more in execution as well for during that final. What was the plan in terms of channels? So obviously, you mentioned that Jack was kind of live tweeting. Twitter obviously was the big one on the night, especially for me. But you do have the other ones as well, and you've talked a lot, for example, about Instagram in the past too. What were the different plans for each of the different channels?
You're right, Twitter's a massive one, and that's where you can probably be the most reactive. We have a centralized content planner, which I think again talked about on the podcast at various times, and we use Google Sheets. So me and Jack in the build up to the final were looking at going, right, I should create a new tab within the Google Sheets to just have a on the night. It was a bit of a checklist going per platform, what do we need to put out? And that varied in things between, you know, the qualification we've done it, and the video and the graphics, to, you know, this is our making sure we've prepped all the assets for, here's a Euro 2020 fixtures, here's content from behind the scenes in Belgrade, who we were fortunate to have Bales and Lewis out there and getting in amongst it. We've got then had obviously the other opportunities that we had planned and around retail, and, you know, you look at anything that anticipating what questions were going to come up or people wanted to know or what we wanted people to know, and work the channels there. Instagram, we did our usual during the game, we posted some images. Actually, the images coming in from Belgrade were a lot slower in receiving them than we normally do. So that also proved that we couldn't probably do as much in the sort of your normal feed. But then with stories, we again was a lot of sort of fan related and player related, especially after we qualified, because we wanted to use that. We wanted to use Twitter for fan content as well. And then obviously within something like Facebook, where it's the big updates for us, it's the we've qualified, here's the bits and pieces video, here's information. And then YouTube, we know that, and that in YouTube in hindsight, we didn't lose focus on YouTube, but we missed a couple of opportunities in that we didn't directly upload our, like the Yes Sir, I Can Boogie in the Changing Rooms or the David Marshall straight away, and it took us a couple of days, and then the other people uploaded our content and we're getting loads of views off it and stuff like that. So, but look, it's one of these things that I'm not losing sleep over anything like that at all, sort of thing, because I'm so proud of the team and the output that we did across the whole board, and that was an oversight on my behalf more than anything. So yeah, there was a plan, and we always had the plan ready that not only on our social channels, but we'd have an email be going out the following morning celebrating qualification. There was website stuff that we needed to add from a messaging but also retail point of view. So yeah, we were organised in that we had our checklist, we knew what we wanted to do, some stuff got dropped and we pushed to the following day. The fact that the game went to extra time obviously has a bit of a knock-on effect as well, but it was working. Again, what was our objectives, what channel's going to work best for what content, and having an idea, and then obviously on top of that, it's ad hoc, and it's just reacting to things that are coming in and that you see.
Yeah, we'll touch on the reactive stuff in a wee second. I just wanted to quickly touch on one thing before we do, and how mad it is that the first time the words Scotland men's team have qualified for a tournament were tweeted on that night. Do you know what I mean? Like, because like Twitter wasn't a thing in 1990, like nothing was a thing in 1998. So to have that kind of responsibility, like was that ever thought about at all in the planning, in terms of what would actually be written or what would be said when the moment, or if the moment did happen?
Yeah, no, I definitely did, and like any other media team or whoever it is across the country, not only were we discussing in the build-up to our content on Zoom a lot, but WhatsApp was on fire that night. And me and Jack during the day, funny enough, had been talking about, like, or I think it was the day before, what messaging do we, because we knew we had a graphic, we knew we had the as I said, the bits and pieces video with the new Hampden lights, which, you know, I think also gets lost in it that there's actually new lights being put into to Hampden that are going to allow us to have light shows when fans go back and stuff like that. But you know, it's easy to overcomplicate these things. You know, we were conscious that the tweet, when in hindsight it was the penalty save and not a full time tweet, but the penalty tweet then becomes the we've qualified tweet. Then you've got a we've done it tweet, and then you've got our Facebook post or Instagram post, and then you've got, you know, probably the other things like the bits and pieces stuff, and you know, it's when you take a moment to reflect on going, and both myself, Jack, Ailsa, Connor, I've all looked back and going, you know, we were part of something that, as fans, was incredible, but to be playing a role in those celebrations and to be able to, in Jack's case, obviously tweet out that sort of stuff or post on Facebook that we've qualified is something that we've all said we'll stick with. By us, with us for the rest of our careers.
Let's touch on a few of the kind of, well, a bit on the reactive stuff now, but also a few more videos too. Firstly, we've touched on how kind of long the planning takes for the videos, but the Scotland Way video, you might have a different name for it internally, but I've titled it that. How long have you personally or anybody in the team been thinking about something like that?
So that was a video that me and Ailsa had created when Alex McLeish took charge for the second time, and it was his first Scotland meetup, and that the original basis of that email video, which you know, a lot of it still is in. So from the walkout at 98 to the timeline was all for a internal player motivational video. Now, the plan was that, and that was the start of what was it, the Nations League, and you know, going into that qualification campaign. And I'd always had the thought that, you know, it would be great to put this video out to say, you know, this was a video that had shown the players and now we've qualified. Now, that obviously didn't happen, but we had been sitting on this internally, that video internally, for a while. You know, we'd adapt it internally a couple of times. So our performance school kids, Brian McLaughlin, would show them that on their first day, their sort of induction day, to say, and we adapted it, as I said, at the end. It was, you know, the flow of it had been that it was actual video content at the start of World Cup. Now, we can't use that sort of content on our social channels. So we had a video with 98, and then we went into that timeline, which was still there, and it was the messaging was, what do you want to be remembered for? And we had more quotes from ex-players through it, and it's your chance to make history. And the performance school one actually had a clip of Billy Gilmore at the start saying, I want to be the best player in the world. Or it was a quote from Billy that said, I want to be the best player in the world. And then the performance school one was adapted. So we were like, because me and Ailsa are so proud of that video. It was one of the things that, you know, I'd been sitting there for two and a bit years. And the plan was, right, if we qualify this time, we're going to adapt it. What I did was I went through that whole video and acknowledged that, right, we have to take the sort of live moving imagery out the start and replace it with photos, because we can't use that footage. Timeline remains. We just updated it with some better quality stuff that we had. And then the messaging changed. So what do you want to be remembered for was, there have been some special moments along the way. And that's when we put in the the McFadden goal and the Griffiths goal were already in the video, but it was just changing the context of what that was in. And then we finally done it, and we always knew, right, we'll take Serbia sort of clips and put that in when we do it as well. So it was great to be able, and again, absolute kudos to Ailsa, who had to do that while pretty much travelling between Serbia and Slovakia, and getting that turned around. And because I've got, you know, Connor's working on other stuff, you've got so much else going on. So yeah, we've been sitting on that one for two and a bit years, and I'm just delighted that we managed to get it out.
Yeah, I love that. And obviously, I think if you ever scroll through Scottish national team timeline, you've got that one. I mean, that one sticks out massively to me, and it's amazing to hear that it's been kind of so long in the planning. It's gone through so many different various iterations before kind of the public see it, almost the fans see it. But you flip the other side of that and you've got the reactive content. Now, nobody could have predicted what was going to happen to Yes Sir, I Can Boogie. Just talk to us about that.
Yeah, look, that was one of the things that no one, if somebody had told me this time last year that, oh, by the way, two new songs that are going on the Hampden playlist are Bacara, Yes Sir, I Can Boogie, and Saturday Night at Wigfield, I would have probably just laughed at you. There's no chance I'm putting them on the playlist. But, you know, it's one of these things. Obviously, this all started with Andy Considine and his stag do, and then, you know, the Open Goal Boys have done a lot with it. And I mean, as soon as the players started singing it in the dressing room that night, you know, it just exploded more. I mean, we had toyed with the idea of putting it on the playlist for when Considine got called up for the semi-final squad. But obviously, we're very conscious as well about what it might mean to him and stuff like that. But now it's just exploding. And I think it's taken on a whole new meaning now. I think it's gone far beyond the origins of it, and it's gone into what is an unofficial anthem. And you know, you've got schools doing sessions and classes where playing Yes Sir, I Can Boogie. The radio airtime has gone through the roof. Spotify listens have gone through the roof. Bacara, the woman from Bacara, has been on just about every Scottish news channel or paper, it seems. And I think every music artist in Scotland that appears has been in touch with them to try and do something with them, to make it a song going into the Euro. So yeah, no, look, it's great. And I think Graham Easton, who's our Hampden announcer, I know he has his own podcast and things like that, and it has that connection between music and sport. And I think there's no better evidence of that sort of connection between what the role music can play. You know, over the last few years, that we've had bits and pieces become more of a sort of Scotland, associated with Scotland national team. We've now got Bacara, we've got Saturday Night Wigfield. You know, the music and football especially has a strong connection, and it's great for us. It means it allows us to be able to give us more content ideas and more chances to do some various different things that you probably wouldn't expect from us.
Yeah, definitely. And you look through the channel of that night, and you've got that video getting, I think it's 1.6 million last time I checked now. But then you scroll kind of towards nearer the time, and there's the after party going on. And obviously it's great to get a look behind the scenes like that at the celebrations. I think the Davy Marshall video's got over 3 million views now on Twitter.
3 million views on Twitter. I mean, our video views across all our channels, I think, are sitting for the international period that goes, which I've counted from the Monday before the final to the Sunday after the Slovakia game. So basically about 2 weeks worth of an international period. And this is purely just us. Obviously, there was so much social content and people which have ripped our videos, or you've got their own content and stuff like that. But our own channels had 13.3 million video views. 8 million minutes worth of video were watched in that two-week period alone from our channels only. So, yeah, it's massive. We've never seen numbers like that. I'm very conscious of the national team. I look at the likes of Celtic and Rangers and some of the... It's not always about numbers. It's definitely not always about that. But I look at some of the numbers that they do, and I'm like, we're not at that level in Scotland when it comes to the club side of things for Celtic and Rangers. But that night and since, we've seen quite a jump. But then you look at when Andy Robertson and John McGinn post something, they're dwarfing our numbers. You know, it was everything that we've talked about, thought about, you know, that would be cool to do, but we just don't have enough buy-in from fans at the moment, just because whether it's bad defeats or just the run that we're on or whatever. But we always knew if we can qualify, you know, this will explode, and it did for us compared to breaking sort of all sorts of records for our own content.
Obviously, the fans, if they were at the match, either at Hampden or in Belgrade, they wouldn't have been in that situation anyway. They wouldn't have been able to see that if they were at the game. But it's just great to get that behind the scenes look. And I think obviously the numbers that you just mentioned there show that fans just react so well to that behind the scenes kind of content, don't they?
Well, definitely. Nobody was really in a pub. Nobody was in a ground. So your audience has already naturally got bigger because people are at home, and your natural thing's going to be do is go on your mobile phone or your tablet or whatever it is. And, you know, you're right. We wouldn't have had those people, because if I was a fan in Belgrade, as soon as we qualify, you're out the stadium, you're in a pub, you're singing songs, and you're probably not going to look at all the social content until the morning after or the day after that you wake up. Those in the pub, again, you're living in that moment, or hopefully you're living in that moment, and you're not going to be doing that. So our audience was kind of amplified in a way, in that if you look at, again, and I'm looking at it from purely a numbers point of view in this, and engagement and all the sort of stuff that we can probably go into in terms of some other numbers, but you know, it was a bit of a perfect storm in that everybody was pretty much at home, and are going to be, it's the only way they could share it with so many other people was to share it online. Whereas if it was, as I said, you're in the stadium or you're in a pub watching that, you share it with the people around you. But we were fortunate that we were in that centralised position that we want to share this with as many people as possible. And we had the biggest audience that we probably could have ever have asked for online at that moment.
Yeah, that's absolutely massive. And I think you mentioned as well, there was so much other content going on as well at the same time, not just from the Scottish national team official channels. How difficult was it for you guys to kind of monitor that? Obviously, as we've touched on during this podcast, with everything else going on at the same time, and then decide what you were going to react with, what you were going to interact with, what you were going to share yourself. Because again, scrolling through the channels, there was a lot that you guys shared, which was obviously, from a fan perspective, great to see as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, for us, for that 2 week period, we had 2.3 million social engagements. Now, whether that is obviously just, it could be just a like or a retweet or a whatever it is, but I mean, 2.3 million for us, and especially on that night, well, it was crazy to know, you couldn't keep up with your notifications. But if you, between me and Jack, if you're spotting something, or we might bookmark something, or we'll like something, and we'll go, right, we'll maybe come back to that, but oh, we'll jump on board with that just now. And it was, you were just, instincts kind of kicked in terms of what you were doing. And then in the moments that, you know, you're in work mode, but I was been going to Scotland games religiously with my mates for the last 10, 12 years before I, and no, actually, probably going back to 2006, 2005. You know, I'm kind of trying to share it with them because they've all been on Zoom calls for the last whatever, and you know, you get that moment to go on your own Twitter feed where you're not tagged in anything as a Scotland NT, or you go on Instagram and you're not tagged in or see it, and you see other stuff that it's just people are doing, and you go, right, well, that's good, we'll keep hold of that or take a note of that, actually just go and jump on board, and even if they're not tagged us in, we'll go and do something with that maybe. And you know, it was you're never going to get everything. I think as we went into both myself and Jack were up to about 3-4 o'clock that Thursday night going into Friday. First thing on it again, you know, notifications are still crazy, but they're not as crazy. You can start to spot a few more things. One of the most touching things that I think I just summed all up was when we had a little bit of interaction with Strathcarran Hospice, and it just showed what it meant to so many different people. But as I said, you know, we had schools doing stuff. You had just fans. You had players. And that's the thing. You don't want to miss player content as well, because you want to make sure you're giving everybody so we can retweet players and stuff like that to amplify that. And, you know, it's, you're never going to get everything. But, I mean, we tried our hardest.
Yeah, you definitely did. And I guess you don't... I feel like it feels like I'm going to be harsh to say this, but you don't want to get everything either. You want to get some of the best of what you're seeing. And like you mentioned, I mean, you just mentioned it there, and I think I kind of welled up a little bit, but that Strathcarran Hospice kind of interaction, it was just amazing to see. And like the fact that Steve Clarke got involved as well, it was just superb.
Yeah, and you don't plan for those things, and you don't go looking for those things. That was one that just I'd spotted on our mentions, and then I think I originally just gave it a blue love heart quote tweet, and then from there they had got in touch about, oh, is it possible to get a message, you know, to Willie, and you know, you just look at that, and I was just like, all right, we'll see what we can do, and you can't promise anything, but you know, Steve was up for doing it, which was great by Steve. And you know, you put that message out, and I was very conscious, because I'm always conscious about this. We do a lot of surprise and delights and never make it onto social. We'll do stuff for first time fans in the ground that we don't, it's probably the Scottish way, but we try to be humble about this sort of stuff where we can. And we didn't do this as a quote reply and put the video in that way. We just replied directly to the hospice, knowing that, you know, we want to make it special for Willie, and if it gets picked up, it gets picked up, great. But, you know, we wanted to make it as special as possible for Willie, and, you know, the reaction off the back of that, and the well wishes for Willie, and, you know, we had his grandchildren messaging it, and again, will not lie, and I'm sure Jack won't mind me saying this either, but separately we both sort of welled up with that massively. And at one point, I mean, we'd worked a lot, obviously from the Thursday right the way through to probably the Saturday evening, and you know, your emotions could be all over the place, and you know, it's just, yeah, it makes it a little bit more rewarding when you can you know you can make sort of that sort of special moment for people, no matter what the circumstances are. So it was one of the ones I was glad that I actually spotted.
Yeah, definitely. It feels harsh to move on from that now and talk about kind of analysis. But you've mentioned loads of numbers already. You put a LinkedIn post out as well, I think, earlier on this week as we're recording this. But is there any more that you wanted to just call out over that kind of the recent international break that you've spotted as you've gone back and had a look?
Yeah, look, I've had a moment to look back on it all and reflect back on everything. And one of the big things is that we knew qualification was going to be big. And as I said, look, it was massive in terms of what we did. I think, you know, our website traffic was up 166% for that time period. Now, we had nothing on sale tickets-wise or anything like that. But year on year for that time period, it was up 166%. Our page views were up 347%. But one of the big things was like, and I noticed this on the night, because obviously I've got the Google Analytics real-time analytics actually up on the screen and looking at, right, what are people looking for? What are they interacting with? What are the questions we need to be looking at? And our shop was one that was traffic was just going through the roof on. And in the end, we were up 287% just on our shop page alone. Now, we don't have an e-commerce platform for Scotland merchandise on a shop. What you do is you go on our Scotland shop page and we've listed out products and stuff like that are the top products at JD, that if you click on, you'll get taken to JD, and we list all our licensees and partners who are official ones. And even for them, I think in that 2 week period, clicks to JD merchandise or the website from our website was up 438%. Our clicks to our licensees and partners was up 312% year on year. We were tracking what products people were clicking on. We were tracking what licensees people were clicking on. And so we knew that, right, the shop's big. And we always plan to promote things like Scotland merchandise after if we had qualified. But I think it just reiterated to us that, you know, we can probably push it a little bit more here than we were going to do anyway, because, you know, the traffic was there, we could see what people were doing. And then, you know, we were fortunate that Stephen Romeo, who's obviously been on our podcast before with the retail one, maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago, he had lined up some of his partners going, right, if we qualify, you know, that the social team are going out with No Scotland No Party. If you want to get on board, you can maybe prep some stuff. So once obviously David Marshall saves that penalty, the wheels are in motion. You know that you go, right, those products are going to be live this time. So we're now working with through the night with the likes of JD or the likes of Stephen to make sure that we've got everything lined up. And, you know, the numbers correspond to that sort of plan and an execution, because as I said, look, people were looking for that sort of stuff, and that's what the numbers told us. And we were fortunate enough that, and we can reward a lot of these partners who have also stuck with us for a number of years to give them that opportunity to cater to the fans' needs.
Yeah, I think that it just comes back to same along similar lines of the reactive video content, but to have that lined up, you don't want to really have egg on your face if it doesn't come off, but to have it lined up and then to get that out because you're seeing the numbers, I think that, yeah, it was superb. I definitely spotted it with obviously taking the diehard fan hat off there and taking and putting the marketing hat on. I'm like, yes, Michael and the guys in the team are on that because it's a huge opportunity if anything else.
Oh, massively. And look, I speak about this a lot. I was a fan before I took this job, and I'm always aware of what the fan sentiment is towards the Scottish FA, towards, you know, I'm pretty sure that if you look back on Facebook posts or whatever else, I've probably moaned about just being seen as a cash cow as a fan back in the day and stuff like that. And as I said, I'm very wary about this, and but I'm also we've got to balance it out with commercial requirements. However, you know, we had what we had planned, and then we actually did more on top of it, whether that was through our follow-up emails and whatever else, because even to this day, our shop's still getting hit by a lot of traffic. JD, you see, I think we put our Anthem jacket on sale, and whether you agree with the price or not, that sold out within hours, really. I think a few went back on sale once cancelled orders came back through and stuff like that. But, you know, that was something that people were asking about. You know, it was just so much going on that we just wanted to make sure that we were trying to cater to fans' needs as much as possible without it looking like we were consciously just chasing the pound, if you like. You'll notice that we didn't actively push Scotland Supporters Club memberships yet. We've had an influx of new members because we wanted just to people to celebrate and enjoy the moment. And we know that revenue will come through merchandise sales and all that naturally because of what's happened. But it's just, as I said, it's finding that balance between what we're doing, commercial needs, but also taking fans sort of their needs into consideration as well.
You touched on that you were a fan before you got the job as well. And yeah, a few weeks have passed now while we're recording this one. Have you had much of a chance at all to have a bit of a chill and reflect on what happened from a work perspective and from that fan perspective as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, don't get me wrong, the 1 week on video that we've got, I've watched that so many times. I'm now just, even though that I played a massive role in that video, I still just look at it as a fan, you know, and take that in. And when I was doing I put together a report for internally that mentions a lot of these numbers and more. Believe it or not, I've got stats on radio playtime and Spotify plays for Bacara and all sorts of it. But, you know, looking back on that and the work, and I can't emphasise this enough, it's the work that and the hours and the effort that my team put in to make it all happen. And I still look back on that and go, right, you know, you always want to go, what would you do different? Not really nothing. As I said, probably the only one would maybe be just be a bit quicker with some of our reactive sort of celebration content on YouTube is probably the only flaw I can put in what we did. And that's just me being overcritical more than anything. Because as I said, there's nothing I've talked to a lot of people and been so grateful for all the messages as well that we've had of people acknowledging just how good an output that we did and like Jack Ailes and Connor did and that gives you satisfaction as well and you start thinking and reflecting, you're going, you know, me and Ailes were there that night in Kazakhstan. I've been as a fan to some or watched some bad results, so we've been close on a number of occasions. I was at that playoff in 2003. I was at the Italy game. You look at all the sort of things you've been through and you go, that Thursday night just made up for all of it. And it made it good to be able to reflect on it as a fan, but also as from a professional capacity. I'm looking at what we did. And now, yeah, look, all attention's now sort of turned to Euro 2020. As well as a lot of the other stuff that goes in with a job in Scottish Cup and grassroots football and various other projects that we've got going on. But that excitement that you can, we've got a bit of good feeling around Scotland. And yeah, while there's still a bit of work to go on the pitch, but and that's by Steve's and the rest of the team's own admission, you know, it's a positive time around Scotland, which has not always been the case in my time that I've been at the Scottish FA.
You mentioned the Euros there, obviously. I mean, if you've been living under a rock, we are obviously going to the Euros in the summer of 2021. Has planning started for that yet? Have you managed to have a sit down and start thinking about that?
Yeah, look, I'll be honest. I was thinking about what we were going to do for the Euros before we had qualified, and I'd been thinking about it at the same time as when we were planning playoff content. If I'm honest, I've got an idea for a squad announcement video. I've got an idea for what we want to do in the build-up to the tournament. I've got sort of ideas of what we want to do during the tournament. Obviously, you're never probably going to be able to do it all, especially if you're still working with a small team. But, you know, we've looked at what England have done, what Wales do, learnings that they've had, you know, learnings that we've had from when some of the team were out in France for the World Cup last year for the women's team. And you go, right, there's a number of things that we want to do. What are we going to do? Who do we need support from? And how are we going to do it? And yeah, so yeah, no, look, planning's well underway across everybody at the moment in time. And yeah, it's going to be an exciting year. A lot of things that we want to do. And like as I said, like you saw that connection between the fans and Guadalajara and the team when we qualified. You see the connection between music and football. One of the things I want to explore more is the connection between art and football as well, and as a Scottish illustrators, and I think that's important that I want to work with Scottish ones, because I want this to be a celebration of Scotland as well, as we go through, and how do we make sure that when we're going into the final, that it's finals, that it's not just Glasgow that is the focal point for the Euros, it's the whole of Scotland, and it's getting the whole of Scotland involved across different areas and different people, and whether you are 4 years old and in nursery to whether you're 94 and you've seen us at all the other major tournaments, you know, we want to make sure we can try and connect with as many people as possible. We've started, we need to firm them up, but we've got a list of objectives that we want to do and make sure that we are not just doing things for the sake of it, because there's going to be a lot of opportunity to do that, but make sure that what we're doing it for a reason and we're doing it for the right reasons.
Anything you want to share just now, or will we wait for that one until something nearer the time?
I don't want to be on this promising stuff, and then if there's anybody from the Scottish FA listening going, you are kidding me, we've not agreed to that. So no, we're going to have to wait. But I would definitely, as I said, look, there's lots I want to explore. The art one's probably, working with illustrators is probably one I want to look at through next year. So look, if there's anybody listening to this, particularly as an illustrator, to get in touch. Because yeah, like there's lots that opportunity, and while we're not going to be able to do everything, as I keep saying, but we're going to try and do some really cool stuff, hopefully.
That's very exciting, yeah. And will it be No Scotland, No Party, or will there be a new slogan rolled out for the Euros, do you think?
That's a very good question, actually, and it's probably the one, because we're just determining what our sort of objectives are and what we're looking to achieve, because for us it's not just the tournament, it's obviously the what goes on beyond that, and how do we keep people engaged with Scotland. I don't want those that have found a new sort of fire in their belly for Scotland after that night in Belgrade to kind of then go back off us once we are done at the Euros. Now, Pierre, I'm convinced we're going to do a Greece and we're going to win the whole thing, and then life will be very easy after. But if that is not the case, and come July, August, and hopefully now, obviously I'm not privy to any of this information, but you just hope that fans are getting, we're going to be getting a lot of fans into our qualifiers come September time. You know, you want those people to be coming in. You want Hampden to be a lot fuller than it normally is, and you want to carry that on. And to do that, we've got to use the Euros as a platform, and the build-up to Euros as a platform to make that happen and make everybody proud to be supporting Scotland and make everybody want to be engaged with us or going on beyond it.
I'm sure I've seen Lyndon Dykes. I don't know if it was me, but somebody else definitely compared Lyndon Dykes to Angelos Karisteas at some point on Twitter. I'm sure I've seen that, but yeah, we'll maybe not hold you to the Greece thing too much, Michael, but you have said it live on the podcast. So.
Hey, no, and here, I'll happily stick by that.
Anything else you want to touch on? I think that was superb. Obviously, I said it on Twitter at the time, but fascinating listening to you, fascinating to hear what all went into it. An incredible job that you did, that Ailsa did, that Jack did, that Connor did, that the whole team did. And it was thoroughly enjoyable to follow along with on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, across everything. Yeah, just superb, really.
No, I appreciate that. And I've had to tell Connor that while he was only 2 weeks in the job at the time that we qualified, that it's not always like that. So,
yeah, anything else to finish us off? I think we'll leave the usual things we've liked for the next time. We've got a few more podcasts hopefully lined up now that we've done this one, and now that that busy period is out of the way for you.
Yeah, no, look, anybody that's listening to this and they've always had an idea for content that they think it might work for us, or, you know, there's stuff that they want to see more of from a national team perspective, please don't hesitate to get in touch. I'm pretty active on Twitter most of the time, or on LinkedIn. So, yeah, look, feel free. I've already had a couple of people, funny enough, from different sports get in touch with, I've always had this idea, blah, blah, blah. So, look, I'm not precious about where ideas come from, as you know, and I'll give credit to whoever it is that I need to give credit to that came up with the idea. So, but yeah, if there is stuff that people want to see more of that we do, or want more insight into different things, we did that coaches thing with the four coaching staff for the first time, and that seemed to go down well, and it was an enjoyable piece to do. So we're always looking to do different angles. So yeah, feel free to get in touch. And just want to sort of finish off and say it once again, it's just that thank the team and say that I could not be prouder of Ailsa, Jack and Connor for what they did during that time.
Superb. And just everybody listening will probably know where to find you already, but where can they find you if they want to get in touch with you?
At Michael Bockel on Twitter, which is BOCHEL, or just find me on LinkedIn. I think I said on one of our last podcasts, I think I'm the only Michael Bockel in the world, so it's not hard to find me.
Perfect. And yeah, thank you again if you have been listening. And yeah, hopefully you enjoyed that little sneak peek behind the scenes at what went on when we qualified for the Euros. I'm going to say it again because we can't say it enough. Cheers. Thank you.